Christian Medical and Dental Associations hope you enjoy today's chapel message.
We use the word love a lot. I love my new investment. It's doing so great. I love my house. I love my car. You want to come up and see my Subaru? It's a great car. We talk about we love our hobbies. We ladies go to the beauty parlor, and I just love what they did with my hair. Or our favorite TV show, or movies, or of course we say we love our children, our parents. The list just goes on. But a lot of these terms really aren't the real concept of love. We use that word kind of to put an exclamation point about something that we like. But the Bible has a whole different look at love, and we're going to talk about that. Because even in our churches, among our Christian friends, we use that word love, and oftentimes not in the most meaningful way. There's nothing wrong with that, but at the same time, we really need to understand one of the fruits of the Spirit, in fact, the most important fruit of the Spirit. 2 Timothy 3:2 and 4 talks about that. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. All kinds of loves that we see, and many of them aren't very good. Paul's writing this as he sits in a prison in Rome, writing to Timothy. And of course, Rome was a place of terrible debauchery. The more you read about the Nero and Felix and all these other people involved in the ruling of Rome, you found out how self-centered they were, the loving of wealth, about the pride they had, beating their slaves, unfaithful to their wives, disobeying their parents, getting away with it, ungrateful. The list just goes on and on. And we see that in our own country. We're not as bad as Rome, as we understand Rome, but we surely have our problems. This use of the word love describes our world. Oftentimes people love themselves more than God. Even some Christians do. It's easy to fall into that trap. Me first, being in the center of your world. But the Bible tells us very clearly that that's wrong. And so we're going to dig into what is love. What is love? It's important for us to understand it in the biblical sense and what it really means for us as a Christian, because the Bible says in 1 John 4:8, he who does not love does not know God, for God is love. So understanding what it really means to love is so important in our relationship with Christ. If we don't have true love, we really don't know God. And we need to remember that not all love is created equal, especially when we use it in a loose manner. C.S. Lewis wrote a number of books. If you haven't read C.S. Lewis, you should get through some of them. The Abolition of Man, A Grief Observed, The Problem of Pain, The Great Divorce, Miracles, The Screwtape Letters. The best book that you could give to somebody who doesn't know Jesus, I think, is Mere Christianity, the wonderful book where he introduces people to Christ. But we want to talk about his book, The Four Loves, explaining to us the different types of love, that they're not equal, and what we should be pursuing as Christians and focused on. Let's look at storge, which is up in there. I know that's written small up there, but storge, that means affection. It's affectionate-like love. It's like someone with fondness or familiarity. You're liking them. A family member or people who relate in familiar ways that have otherwise found themselves bonded by chance. Sometimes you see that among military people that have been in combat together. They have this affection, this bond with the person that's been in the trenches beside them. It's true of our family members who we relate to in familiar ways that have otherwise found themselves bonded by chance. You didn't pick your brothers and sisters. but you have this affection, I hope, storge, for them. It's the most natural, emotive, widely diffused of all the loves. And expect it from our family members, irrespective of the person's behavior, though sometimes there's disagreements and we don't get along. I used to fight with my brother when I was younger, sometimes in play, and sometimes we had fight. But your brother, your sister, my parents, my grandparents, I always had a love for them, this storge love. It's that affection, strength is also what makes it vulnerable. And I bet you we could go through this room and have testimonies of people that have difficulties in their family with siblings or cousins or aunts or uncles, and people haven't talked to each other for years because of it. They ignore each other. So these type of love is important, but it's not the main love we're going to talk about. The second one is philia. You know, Philadelphia, the city of what? Brotherly love. And this is friendship love. And you have friends that you like. You love spending time with them. You love going out with them, doing things together, maybe a hobby, maybe going to a movie, or just going over for a visit. There are friends who are as close as siblings or relatives in the love you have and the strength of it. And it's called philia love. It's the least biological, organic, instinctive, gregarious, and necessary. But many people think it's the least natural of loves. It's the loves that you develop over time because of spending time together. And it's freely chosen. And I'm sure you could give a list of people like that. When I think of that, I think of Dr. Sturi, who was my mentor from the time I was in high school and college, and then as a doctor, and he was a second father to me. And we had a deep, deep relationship. I think of a relationship with Gene that we've worked together for almost, over 30 years now. And he is closer than a brother in many ways. We live next door to each other. I think of Susan Carter, who I worked with for years and used to work here. Many of those who I served with on the mission field, you develop very close relationships because you're so interdependent with each other. And all the other missionaries are uncles and aunts, and actually closer to your children than their own uncles and aunts are halfway around the world. There's a deep commitment sometimes in this Philadelphia love, and that's important. And then there's eros, romantic love. And some of you have experienced that and are still experiencing it. Some of you are wishing you could experience it. Those are the times in every one of our lives for that. This is a passionate love between men and women. It's often associated with strong emotions and desire. I remember the first time I saw Jody jumping on the trampoline at Asbury University, turning flips with that long ponytail, and my heart just hit it, man. I got to get to know this girl. And started looking for her in the library, and I just happened to be studying close to her, and can I take you home? And, you know, all those type of things. Lewis acknowledged the intensity of romantic love, but he also wants us to know, when he writes about it, that it can be fickle, can be tempered, has to be tempered with reason and commitment. And you've probably seen situations, I can think of some myself, you go to a wedding, you know the people involved, and you think, I'm not sure this one's going to last. They've had that surge of romantic love, but there's no good foundation under it. And oftentimes it doesn't work. Lewis distinguishes between being in love and love as a sustained choice. Let me say that again. Of being in love, the romantic, the emotions, the desire, and love as a sustained choice, emphasizing that the latter is what is essential for lasting relationships. It's why when we take a vow when we get married, because it's a commitment. A vow is a solemn promise and pledge involving commitment to perform a specific action or abstain from something. And these vows were often made in response to a desire or a need with the understanding that God's favor or blessing is being sought. And you're making a promise in front of a group of people. I remember when I married Jody, I stood up and I said, in the name of God, I take you, Jody, to be my wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish until we are parted by death. This is my solemn vow. I don't have that beating heart of anticipation when I first started dating, but this is much more solid. This is much more deeper because I made a vow. And we've gone through some sickness and some health and difficult times, and you will. And I stood and I gave her a ring and I said, this is a sign of my vow. And with all that I am and all that I have, I honor you in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Ghost. A commitment. And that's what marriage should be. Unfortunately, in our country, it's, well, as long as I feel love for you and want you, we'll stay married. And that's not what real Eros love is, and especially not what we're going to talk about later, agape love. That's why the divorce rate is 40 to 60% for people married the first time, 60 to 67% for people in their second marriage, and 70% of them fail in their third marriage. So it's a sad situation. And then finally, there's agape love. Agape love, and that's what we're going to focus in on, because that's the love that the Bible is talking to us about, in loving God and loving others. It's a gift that you give, expecting nothing in return. It's given unconditionally. It's not because you're going to be healthy, you're always going to be beautiful, or always going to be just so excited about the fact that we're together. It's seeking the other's person highest good for that other person. Love that exists regardless of changing circumstances. It's the greatest of the four loves. And actually, those four loves can be greater because of agape love is part of them as well. Natural loves are not self-sufficient. Let me say that again. Natural loves are not self-sufficient. And agape love models the Christian virtue of being Christ-like. Christ loved us despite how we were. He loved people as they crucified him. It should be in our marriages, it should be in our relationships. And we're going to dig into this in a way in this chapel and the next chapel. Agape actually means, in the original language, charity. It's an old term. But it's the gift of love that's unconditional, seeing the highest good, seeking the highest good for the other person. Love that exists regardless of changing circumstances. It's the models Christ's virtue of being Christ-like in your relationships. It should be in our marriages as well as in our relationships. And so let's dig into agape. 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 8 is the classic, but not the only area where agape love is really talked about in the Bible. It says this, if I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and I had such faith that I could move mountains, but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it, but I didn't love it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable, and it keeps no records of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. Prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless. But love, agape love will last forever. Three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. 1 Corinthians 13:14, we can pick this apart a little bit. I hope you can read it. I know the script is a little bit small. It says it's patient and kind. It has muscle, no matter what the other person's response. You've seen parents who had wayward children, and children maybe had done terrible things to them, and they still love them, no matter what's happened. Kindness makes a person attractive. I remember stories around town when I was growing up, and even I paid more attention when I got older. Down at our grocery store was an independent grocery association store, an IGA. I don't know if you had any of those in your areas. You kind of own your own business, and this group helped you get your goods and stuff. And we had an IGA, and Mr. Fitch, we called it Fitch's IGA because the family owned it. Mr. Fitch was a godly, godly man who loved the Lord. And I didn't know till I got a little bit older, and my dad shared with me how many seminary students got through seminary because of Mr. Fitch, because they were poor as could be. And often it started families and young children, and Mr. Fitch would always give him credit, knowing that probably he never was going to get it back. And he would pray with them. He'd see them in the aisle. He knew them by name. And he would say, "Well, Bill, how are you and Sally doing? And I congratulations on that new baby. And, you know, I think I've got more of this than I'm going to sell. Why don't you just take some of that home and cook it up for your family? Because I know it's tough, and it's hard to work and go to seminary, and you've got another job, and I know you're struggling, and, you know." Or they come and they didn't have enough money to pay the bill. Just here, I'll just put that on account. Never ask for it back. That kindness makes a person attractive. Second thing is, do not envy or boast. This relationship is not about me. There's a story told about an eagle who was jealous of another eagle that was bigger than it was, and he landed beside a hunter with a bow and arrow and said, "Why don't you shoot that eagle?" And the hunter turned to him and said, "Well, I got a feather missing on my arrow. Can you give me one?" So he gave him a feather. He shot and he missed. He said, "Well, I think they're out of balance now. Can you give me another feather?" And he gave him another feather, and he missed again, and so he gave him a third feather, and for long he couldn't fly, and he had that first eagle for supper. Jealousy, envy is like that. It eats you up. And if you've got that difficulty, somebody's cuter, prettier, richer, has more toys to play with, whatever it might be, envy or boasting on the other end of the thing, bragging about what you already have, is not real love. You're totally focused on yourself. Not being arrogant or rude strains a relationship. You know, rude people, arrogant people say terrible things. Story goes that there was an admiral looking out from his command post on the deck, and he was coming. It was night. There were storms going on, and he sees a light ahead of him in the distance, and it's clearly coming straight before him. So he got on a radio and he radioed a message saying, "Turn aside 10 degrees starboard." And a few minutes later, the radio came back and said, "Negative, advise you to turn aside 10 degrees starboard." And the admiral got upset and said, "No, you turn aside. I'm an admiral. I'm a command of a battleship." And then the radio came back and said, "I'm a private, and I'm in charge of the lighthouse." He's boasting, using arrogance to make his demands. Doesn't exist on its own way. Okay, I'm going to confess something this week. Last week was my birthday. Turned 74. It's not bad. If you get there, it's pretty good, actually. But if you get there. But Jody got my gift a couple days late, and she ordered it. And a big box came, and a small box came, and she said, I got you a table so you don't have to get down on the floor and cut Simba's fur. Well, I had done that and had some back pain, and she had mentioned it to me, and I'd tell her, honey, I don't need that. I only cut his hair 3-4 times a year. It's not that big a deal. And here she had spent some significant money, a couple hundred bucks on a table and a ramp. I'm not even sure the dog could get up the ramp. And so I go inside and tell her, well, maybe I'd like to send that back. And she argued with me. Honey, you need this. I don't want you to hurt your back. And I was not being very kind. I walked out of there, went into the office, and came back about half hour later and had to apologize to her. I was being rude. She got me something that she felt I needed. I didn't feel like I needed it. I'd like a new pair of AirPods, you know. But I told her I didn't want this. I had told her when we talked about it I didn't want it. She bought it for me anyway. And I realized that how rude I had been. Here's my birthday present, and I'm telling her I want to send it back. So Simba's going to have the best cut hair you've ever seen in the days ahead. And my back is going to be okay. Oh, anyway, I've got to get it set up. I don't need to cut his hair probably again till spring, but I've got the table. So I'm confessing, it's easy to fall into these traps, and I wasn't being kind as I should be. Does not exist on his own way. That's what I was doing with her, insisting on my own way. It's not irritable or resentful. You know, somebody that's irritable and resentful, you don't even want to be around them. I know some people like that in my life and history of my life, and you're just picking your words very carefully because it doesn't take much to set them off. You probably know some people like that as well, maybe somebody in your family. It's like being too close to a fire and you're afraid you're going to be burnt when people are irritable or resentful. Rejoices with the truth. Love rejoices with the truth. It embraces it. It survives in it. It loves and accepts truth in a world that hates so much. You're looking for opportunities to love people that you really don't even know that well. Love is not jealous. Jealousy is cruel as the grave, somebody said. Love applauds success. It doesn't envy others and seeks others' highest goods. When people do better, get a promotion, you don't get one. When people have a position of authority, or people that have more money than you have, or a nicer house than you have, or you name it, envy will eat you up like a cancer if you're jealous and envying what people have and you don't. Having happiness no matter what you have is the key for real love. Love doesn't brag. It's something I've struggled with when I was head of CMDA, because one of my jobs was to tell people how wonderful CMDA was, doctors and everything like that. And I always felt like I was get over the line to make it look like it was me that had made all this happen, not God. You know, I'd describe a new program and trying to be so careful to put it clearly that God is doing these things and it's not us. Yes, we're working hard, but God is doing this and we have the opportunity to be there. And doing that promotion sometimes could seem like that I was so afraid of. Pleasure and flowering of the truth. People that have real love are just like a magnet. People are drawn to them. People want to be around you. There's faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. We're going to stop there. We've got a lot more we want to talk about in some other areas. I want to dig into agape love. And it can happen at the weirdest moments. I walk Simba every day, everybody knows that, and go down our street. And a few weeks ago, I was coming up, and there were two young ladies pulling weeds in Don Thompson's garden. They had been gone a lot, and they had a lot of weeds, and they were sitting in these gravel paths. As I walked by, I thought to myself, man, that must be miserable. I mean, they're trying to kneel down on gravel and pick weeds. And so I just thought, I know what, I've got some of those foam things I kneel on. I went up to the house, got them, brought them down, and gave them to those two young girls and got and had an opportunity to talk to them. They were students from King, and they were trying to make a little money on the side. And so had an opportunity to minister to them and encourage them and find out what they were majoring in and all the rest of it. And it all started just because I wanted to be helpful, to serve them. We're going to talk more about service because you can look for these little opportunities and God can use them to build relationships and show love. And those two girls were so appreciative. And I said, just leave them by the mailbox. And there was and a note saying, thank you, our niece, thank you. Because, you know, and it was just something that God put in my mind. Look for those today. How can you love somebody on the phone? How can you love somebody that you're dealing with, a vendor that's coming in? How can you show them agape love? Let's have a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we need to learn how to love better. I know I do. We never finish this quest. And only you love perfectly. But we can always more perfect our love. Lord, I pray that for each person here. It makes a greater impact on lives than anything else we can do in ministry. Empower them with your agape love. And we'll give you praise in your Son's name. Amen.